Tonight is our sixth, and it appears to be final night of Piyut before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. The reason for that being, next Tuesday night, I have allowed the shiur to be superseded by a very important event. We're having the former UN ambassador, Ambassador Wallace, is going to be here addressing the Iran situation. Should be a very, very meaningful evening, a very sensible, rational person. And I felt that Ace Lassos, that we have to, even though I was looking forward to one more lecture on this series, but I think I will be able to finish up our Yom Kippur assignment tonight. I was going to plan a little surprise for next week, but we'll hold it off. And I'd also just like to invite everyone, assuming everything goes off all right, we're having a very special Tikkun Leil Hoshana Rabbah. On the Saturday night of Hoshana Rabbah, in the sukkah, I hope, weather permitting, we're going to have, first of all, I designed the menu. It's going to be a very a lovely evening with soup and cheese and crackers and fancy bread. Just a really light, lovely suda. And I'm going to be giving a long shiur, somewhere between 2 and 2.5 hours, on the entire service of Hoshana Rabbah. The Hoshana Rabbah, the Hoshana Rahu, the Hoshanos, and the structure of the Hoshanos. So all of those mysterious sections, which are only recited once a year and then recited much too quickly, hopefully we can shed a little bit of light and illuminate.
What day of the holiday is Hoshana Rabbah?
Hoshana Rabbah is Sunday. It is the Sunday.
Which day of the holiday?
Hoshana Rabbah is the fifth day of Chol HaMoed. It's the day before Shemini Atzeres.
It's like a bridge.
Right. It's a bridge. Okay. If you would join me again on page 765. Last week, everyone did a marvelous job of repairing the damage done by Dr. Birnbaum.
Jeff, could you pull that so you may get us a little more oxygen?
And we got through several of the verses. Just to very briefly review, the first of the sections. Now, the truth of the matter is this Kiddushta, this Karova, will go through paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs. It continues through Chazaras, the early part of Chazaras Hashatz, of Musa. I suspect that there are sections of this that we do not say in our congregation, but in the fully unexpurgated version, there's an awful lot of material before you finally get to Unasana Tokev. In any case, let us address our friend, the little jewel, Dr. Adler, who's not here, suggested that this is the same as I think they call it an 11 o'clock number in a Broadway musical that wakes the audience up. I suggested that it's far more like an overture that rings some of the principal themes. And tonight's paragraphs will be no disappointment. You remember that the acrostic here is kind of a fourfold, four shins, four bets, etc., of Shabbat Shabbaton. The next one will be, if I'm not mistaken, Yom Kippurim or something of that, along those natures. So Kalir is playing games with the names of the festival. The last paragraph, which we had the chance to unravel with each other, was that interesting paragraph of Terufa, the third one, which begins with Tamcha. Right, the tough paragraph in your edition, the fourth line, beginning of the fourth line, right, which is really the third stanza. Tamcha befoal surim. She the Israel, who was still Shoshan Emek, the lily of the valley, leans or is supported befo'al on the deeds of the tsurim. Tsurim are like the promontories, which is another way of speaking of the avos, tsur chutzavchem, the rock from which you were hewn, right? We're leaning on them. Tumas hema hayotzrim. Now here is where we noted one of our word bombs, because tumas sounds an awful lot. First of all, it sounds like tumas, which is defilement. It also sounds a lot like tumas, you will, something having to do with mace, you know, death. But here it refers to tumas in the sense of holech tomim, the perfection. Tumas hema hayotzrim, the perfection of those who are called the yotzrim, the fashioners of the world. And here he is actually pulling on a verse, believe this or not, from Divrei Hayomim Aleph, refracted through a midrash. What's the refraction? Well, the funny verse in Divrei Hayomim Aleph is Hema Hayotzrim V'Yoshvei Netoim. It's simply part of a long genealogy of the tribes of Judea. But when the Midrash gets a hold of it, and it says they were the Yotzrim, the Koran translates it, they were the potters. You know, like, big deal. Right? So it's really a throwaway comment in the book of the first book of Chronicles. However, in the hands of the Midrash, Yotzer also means the creators, not just the potters. And Hema HaYotzrim, it says that when, so what is the role of the Avos? The Avos, it says that when God created the world, it doesn't specifically say the Avos. The Bereishis Rabbah language is B'nafshoson shel tzadikim nimlach, that God consulted the spirits of the saints. In other words, that in the work of creation, this is a whole new idea, right? It's a really novel concept, because we have the notion of Nase Odom Bitzalmenu, right? We have the notion of the angels being consulted. But the fact that the Avos were the consults in the work of creation, and that the poet here is fixing on that idea and addressing them or invoking them so much, so as such, Tumas Hema Hayotzrim, the perfect character of those creators of the world, partners of creation, to Rufat Teis La'atzurim, offer a cure, a medication, right? A rehabilitative drug to the Atzurim.
Healing.
Now, what are the Atzurim? A healing to, what are the Atzurim? Those who are, what?
Redominate.
Well, it could be one of the interpretations, indeed, is those who are davening. Another
davening?
Is to those who are gathered, clotted, so to speak, gathered in prayer and fast. So, the sense of the people in shul, so to speak, who
like
at this
Seret.
Yes, exactly. But here, in the midst of Yom Kippur, at the most popular time of the davening, right? The shul is very crowded. So there's a bit of a, I think there's a bit of a wink that, you know, do something for these people who are stuffed into this shul, right? Stuffed in. But it also is Atzurim, according to the traditional commentaries, those who are trapped in the Golus, those who are trapped in the diaspora. Now, what makes that particularly interesting here, remembering who our author is? Where was this written?
Land of Israel.
This is written in the land of Israel. And yet, wonderful research on this, that the Paitanim of Israel always referred to themselves as being in Golus. As being, why? Well, partially because there was no temple in Jerusalem. And if you read this week's Torah reading, Kisova al Haaretz, when the notion of the land of Israel was a kind of a wheel held together by this holy spoke, right? Wherever you were, you planned your year around going to Yerushalayim. Well, like a wheel that has lost its spoke, and that had lost its hub, they're out there on the perimeter. There's nothing in the center to return to. And so in a sense, they're all trapped. Why are they trapped? Because they're trapped without something to return to. Tevel lahaf'il litzarim. And of course, the mention of being atzurim, trapped in Golos, reminds them, really the only negative line in this entire passage of poetry, to darken the world of those who cause us pain. It is remarkable that even though the late Byzantine period was a time of terrible arbitrary decrees against the Jews, there is remarkably little bitterness in Kalir. He doesn't fulminate, he doesn't preoccupy himself with gnashing his teeth in prayers for vengeance. He lives above the fray. He lives in really in the world of the spirit. He acknowledges Golos. He acknowledges, as you'll see in a moment, the fact that he feels distanced from the service of the temple. And yet, he's found a way within his world to restore equilibrium by replacing his close spiritual connection with the patriarchs and matriarchs of Israel as his modality for approaching the season of judgment, which is in essence, I mean, the approach to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is the confrontation with mortality. That's really what it is, with the core fragility of our lives, with the sense that by the time the problem gets fixed, we won't be around anymore to enjoy the solution. That things will be fixed in the big sense. So the confrontation with that, and the fact that he's so frustrated because the Beis HaMikdash is not there and the enemies seem to be winning, and yet he's so not bitter. This line is, you know, what does he wish them? Darkness. Tevel lahaf'il litzarim. Listen where he goes beyond that. Shesilei givoos arba. The plantings, right? As in Shesulim beveis Hashem. The saplings, which are growing from the four hills. Who are the four hills? Are the imahot. Usually, in these equations, often in Piyut, the patriarchs are mountains and the matriarchs are hills. It's very lovely, you know, it's like the sharp angles are male and the kind of sweet, soft, gentle angles in that line of Midrash represent the female. And so it's also, you know, I'm not what I would call a feminist reader, but it is remarkable in Kalir how even-handed he is. He is not one of those people. He does not obsess exclusively on the avos, right? Virayato. He doesn't live in a male world where females are anonymous and invisible. He never goes more. We've seen in our experience Rosh Hashanah here as well. He's very few paragraphs in when he's shifting. Now, on Rosh Hashanah, we understand. On Rosh Hashanah, Sari Imenu and the miracle of the birth of Isaac, all these things. So you know that Sari Imenu is a character. But it's Yom Kippur now. And he's still back to the four hills. Sha'ag. Now, there's a reason for this also. We mentioned it last week, but I recall it to you now. Things that go four in the night. He likes fours. Hey, Marilyn, I'm so happy to see you.
Good.
He likes fours. What's pshat? Well, what's the core four of Yom Kippur? We mentioned this last week, the day of Yom Kippur. The four tfilos. Right? So once he's racking up the things that are four, he mentions the imohos, the matriarchs, and then he also says, sha'ag sefer hamaruba. Now, sha'ag is a great word. Sha'ag is another one of his seemingly endless, and it really means like a roar of a lion, but it's one of his terms that he uses for prayer. Right? He's got a million ways to say daven. Like he's got a hundred, maybe more, he's many different ways to say, to talk about Abraham or Moshe Rabbeinu. These are kinuyim. But synonyms for prayer, he is never at a loss. And this is a very nice one. It is the sha'ag, the prayer which comes as a roar of the Sefer HaMerubah. Now, Sefer HaMerubah is such a sweetie. This is a real word bomb for you. Because when you hear Sefer HaMerubah, don't cheat. What are you thinking?
Almost any of the five books of Moses, but I don't know if one of them is or not.
Exactly, because you're thinking book. But Sefer here doesn't come from book. It comes from Mispar, which means number. The people who were numbered in four sections, by which he means the four directional units, the Galim, around the Mishkan.
Mitei Mispar.
Mitei Mispar, as in Mitei Mispar, right? But he's calling them here Sefer. Why Sefer? Because it's a word bomb. I have to think of a more scholarly sounding felicitous thing, right? Because Mr. Shoemaker in the third row, who hasn't understood one word of the past three paragraphs, he all goes, ooh, Sefer. I know what a Sefer is. God's got his book open and he's writing about who's going to live and who's going to die. Oh, this must be a good part, right? The scholar in row two knows this has nothing to do with the book. Because what is Merubah? What is Sefer Merubah? Now, if you really wanted to get creative, as I suspect Shion is feeling like he wishes he could, there is something, the first four books of the Torah are the ones which are written by God, as opposed to Sefer Devarim, which is inspired and written by Moshe. So if you really wanted to push for a four that went with a Sefer, you could go with that.
It's also play on words. Merubah meaning abundant.
Maybe merubah could mean abundant, but we're looking for all four units, so merubah means squared. Right? But good. But I think that safer is a definite word bomb. Sheva pigios arba. The supplication of four pigios. Right, vayifka b'mokom hahu, and the midrash says it means confrontation, but it is another term meaning prayer. Right, the four. What are the four pigios? Vayifka b'mokom. Right. What are the four prayers? What we said. The four prayers. The four. So he refers to them not as the four prayers as much as the four encounters. Right, of this day, she'e sitkam. Litba. Now this is a very interesting concept, what you'd never believe. It means accept their righteousness, right? Litba. Now it could be she'e, sitkatam litba. Remember that he often reverses words. She'e litba tzidkasam, which means accept the prayers so that you, God, may plead their righteousness. You see what, and this is the way the traditional, the Garugas HaBosem, the medieval commentaries understood this, that a whole dynamic that is surprising. that our prayers on Yom Kippur, for some reason, are not only to God as the recipient, but rather God receives them and He amplifies them. He becomes, in a sense, the pleader on our behalf. The notion that when we are davening, we are supplying God with prayer, kivayochol, to approach His own seat of judgment, right? So that when a person meets with their lawyer, right, you know the lawyer is going to be the one to talk in court. But you tell him as much as you can because you give him, he needs to get from you what you want him to claim on your behalf. And so what you have here, we are not speaking on Yom Kippur in this image. We are not speaking to God as our judge. We are instead switching and speaking to a God who has become our defense attorney. The God who will plead for us. He is, so to speak, already in our pocket. It's such a surprising thing, just tucked away here in this little passage. As opposed to what? As opposed to Rosh Hashanah, when He is every bit the austere judge, and we're lucky if we can get Him to move from His seat of judging to His seat of mercy. But here, He's beyond the seat of mercy. He's in the defense chair, claiming on our behalf. Bito! Anybody want to try, take a shot at Bito?
To say.
Good try. What do you want to say?
Habita.
Why? Because the Python very often slices off a word, lehabit. So normally we would say, you know, habet mishamayim or a. No, that's levate. That's something else. Here is bita, look. But it's look in pietes. Right? Look, but Jessica's catching on because, and there's your, we're coming to your favorite word in a minute. B'mishalech tamim. Who is the mishalech tamim? Of course. He's halech lefonai heyei samim. Now, sir, first of all, I'd like to mention just a little thing. In the shift, when Hashem says to Abraham, Hishalech lefonai beheyei samim, walk before me and be perfect. In what voice is that?
Hashem.
It's Hashem, and what's He saying? He is ordering, he's commanding Avram, it's an aspiration. Here's what you must do. But when we get it here, b'mishalech tamim, He's already done it. Look at the one who fulfilled what you said and lived his life walking in perfect faith. B'musar l'chumo chasumim. And look at Musar. Musar, anyone? Musar, anyone?
Criticism,
rebuke, right? Gotcha, word bomb. Word bomb, farmer in the third row. Musar, we're in trouble. Musar here is from Yisurim. And Jessica's favorite word, lichumo. Jessica, please. The suffering of his?
Flesh.
Of his flesh, basar. The suffering, lichumo, of his flesh, chasumim, sealed. What is the chasima? What is the seal of God in the flesh of Abraham?
Brit
Milah. So look, b'musar, in the suffering of lichumo, his flesh, which is sealed in it. Right? Now, but we let you guys say it anyway. Right? That's because any mother who's ever given her kid over to the Moel, she'd rather have it herself than they hate that. Okay. So now there's a few more little things going on, because what is the whole Yom Kippur deal? Chatima, right? So we've got Abraham's chatima in his flesh, right? So look at that. Bitsitko tadiach kisamim. This is a brilliant wordplay. What are kisamim?
Stains.
But let me ask you. So in a stain, a kesem is a stain.
Okay.
In his righteousness, rinse off the stains. Meaning of whom? Of his children. So let me ask you another question. What's another way to read the word kisamim?
Like a righteous person.
Like he is described as a tamim, and his children are kisamim. They are like the righteous.
It's lahadiyach.
Lahadiyach means to rinse off. So in other words, that he is at once reminding us of our imperfection, nevertheless to say there are certain qualities that the Gemara says are seen in the children of Abraham, that they are Rachmonim and Baishanim and Gomlei Gemilus Chasodim. So even when we are tarnished, there is some element in us which is still reminiscent. We are kisamim. So rinse us off so that we will no longer be just kisamim, but tamim, but like him. So we will, in other words, restore our resemblance to our ancestors. I don't blame this on any of the commentaries. That's my own reading. I could be wrong, but I'm hearing it. And he's playing tricks. He already got poor Marilyn with the Musser word bomb. And then there's an interesting term. So the Ephes.
So then what is, so the Tzidko in Abraham's Tzedek, you God,
rinse us off. Rinse off those who are like the Tamim, who are like that father. Or rinse off the stain.
You said Tamim was a sacrifice.
What?
Tamim was a sacrifice.
Well, Tamim is a word used to describe. Okay. It's used to describe Yitzchak as an Ola Tamima, see, in the sense of progeny. One more little thing. What's the concept of Bris Milah? Concept of Bris Milah is to remove something and create perfection in its wake. Right? You remove the Orla and the person is perfected. That's the whole idea. That's why we say this verse just before the Bris Milah. So it is almost all is also this image. We who are the Ki Tamim remove, take away the stain as you would take away the orla and leave us perfect. Be'efes urim v'tumim. And this is a very beautiful, because what is be'efes urim v'tumim? We are with that what?
We don't have it.
We don't have the urim v'tumim. Why not? Because he's recalling again, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. But what he describes as the absence of the Beis HaMikdash is the Urim and Tumim, the magic breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, is the signal of our access to the will of God in the moment. It's a place to consult, to go right or left. So certainly the Efes Urim V'tumim on its first level of meaning simply means in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, you in his look to the Avos, the general theme that we've been working on, look to the patriarchs as the alternative to the Beis HaMikdash. But I see there are layers and layers. The Efes Urim V'tumim, it means without certitude. Now that could mean that is why we have stains, because we are without the guidance, the certitude that comes from the Urim Batumim. Mm-hmm. Or it could also mean that Avraham's discovery of God, before there was a revelation, before he could count on being directed in every step, he was also the Efes Urim Batumim. So why? What would I argue there? I would argue there, and you may think I'm pushing this a bit hard. He is looking at his state not only as a state in the midst of destruction, where we are a people without our temple, we are a people in exile. He is looking at it as a state very much like the original state where we began. When Avraham Avinu was bidden, Hisalech lefonai v'heyeh samim, before there was a people, before the delivery of the land, before the dream of a centralized temple. So in a certain sense, and there's a phrase that Dr. Kenner used to use, I think he was quoting from T.S. Eliot's essay about Hamlet. He talks about a man cheering himself up. So what he's doing is he's acknowledging the Churban, but he's then cheering himself up. He's found the Avos as an alternative route to God's favor, and he's almost identifying with them. They also lived in a world which was Efes Urim Batumim, without those tools.
So Avraham was able to be Tamim even without guidance.
The specifics of guidance, exactly. And he's identifying with that.
When they rebuild the temple in Jerusalem, are they going to have Urim Batumim?
There's a lot of things we're going to have to... A lot of the magic pieces...
Wasn't it the motto of Yale University?
I think Yale was Urim Batumim.
Urim Batumim in Hebrew.
Right.
It is also the four. Tamim, Chatumim, Ketamim, Batumim.
Okay, but that may be a function of the fact that we have four verses.
He's playing with those same letters.
Lashon nofela lashon.
He's playing with each one and giving a slightly different turn.
Right. A turn, and that's where I invoke the theory that we play with, I think, two shiurim ago, Shion.
Yeah,
that the word bomb, that's the one that, that's the word, the one that Marilyn fell for. But it's a very, very august category, Marilyn. I needed you to walk in. However, what Shion is referring to is this notion which words which are not technically, etymologically connected. In other words, if you were to ask grammar, does the word kesem have anything to do with the word tamimus?
No, that's why I'm not calling it a word bomb. It's like a feint.
Right.
He's fainting at it.
Yeah. He's almost implying that maybe there is some mystical connection between these concepts. As the linkage is very subtle, but it makes you think of kisamim for the first time as kisamim. This reads very much. This reads very much like Derrida.
What language did they speak in Aramaic?
It was moving between Greek and then later in Hebrew. When they rejected Greek, I think there was more spoken.
There was some spoken
Hebrew. They
what
brought
did
it
you
back.
Say, Rabbi? It's reading very much like what?
Well, Jacques Derrida, who's very much not in fashion now, but was when I was in college.
What is it?
There was a French critic, and it was called, structuralism or something? One of the isms. He was one of the big theoreticians.
Deconstructions.
Well, what he would do was he would take words and play with them in exactly this way. I have a theory. This is like theory number 74863, which we'll never hear from again. I think that there were several modern poets who were very much influenced by Piut. I have two in mind. I think Derrida, I could argue, because he was Jewish. The other one I'm almost sure about is Yehuda Amichai. Because Yehuda Amichai coming, I checked this with Rabbi Bamberger. Yehuda Amichai came from the same part of Germany where Piyut was very, we know the Radelheimers are crazy about their Piyut, right? And he was raised in that rich atmosphere. And when you play with him, you see his poetry, there are certain kinds of playfulness that you can feel the energy of Piyut under the surface. Anyway, I digress. We have work to do. Come here. Come. There were always kids in my class who were good at getting the teacher off on a tangent. So they go, oh, I didn't finish. I can't give you a test. All right. To more tashlume par. Now, I think that you should all be able to work this out. Timur. Help me with Timur.
Exchange.
Good. From Timura, right? Yeah. Timura, good. The exchange, tashlume par. What is a par? An ox, good. Timur tashlume par. This is all based on unishalma parim sifasenu. What we are doing is a replacement for offering sacrifices. Now, by the way, the par was the one for the Kohen Gadol, right? Tovin hegeg hamasupar. Now, hegeg is a good word. Hegeg is almost as fun as shag. I think he felt the letter gimel was just a good word. It's a funny letter. It just makes things funny. I think Dr. Seuss knew the same thing. And what does he say? To more tavin hegeg hamasupar, you will understand, and in that sense accept hegeg. Now hegeg is not as crazy as you think. Hegeg is actually a word. No, that's Dalit. The hegeg is a biblical word. It actually appears in the book of Psalms in a slightly different. No, that's a thought.
Like a wheel.
It's translated as in Tehillim we have the lashon of Bina Hagigi, which Koran translates, consider my meditation. Maybe related to Higayon a little bit.
Higayon meant meditation.
Right.
Where is
that? That one means logic.
I found the translation. That just happens to be the Koran Bible's translation of Bina Hagigi, which is a pasuk in Tehillim. But he, of course, if there's a word that's used one time and you could get it anywhere near davening, he is always in the market for a davening word. You can sell him a davening word any day of the week. He is always buying. And you notice he very seldom repeats. Look at all the synonyms we've had just in this one little enclosure, right? And he says, Tovin hegeg hamasupar. Hamasupar here, it means that which is being related. And interesting, you have this two strange, which is being related, as in
spoken,
as in mesaper, right? So this time is not a word bomb. The bomb is that you think it's going to be something else, but it turns out to be exactly what you thought. But it's tavin hegeg hamasupar. And this is very interesting, because leave the hegeg out a minute and just focus on the other two words. To speak of prayer as a story that one tells and hopes that God understands the story. There's something so beautiful, because that's what our tefillah, in one sense, is supposed to be. It is the narrative of our lives. It is our story told to God. And all he has to do is understand it. Because what are we trying to do anyway? We're trying to take the pieces, the facts of our existence, and turn them into a coherent narrative. And to know that someone hears it and understands what we're trying to say. Now, understanding means that he understands our version of the story. He credits our version. And before he grants us anything, that is already such a great kindness. That the story is what you said it is. Tokei b'chodesh shofar, of those who blew the shofar at the beginning of the month. Now, what did we say about the shofar blowing when we noted it on Rosh Hashanah? The shofar is, in a certain sense, the anthem of frustration. It is what we need to use when we don't have words. It goes beyond. So we begin the month as Tokei Shofar, and look where we end up. Tal Uvam Bechipur Yechupar. Now, Taluvam is a very interesting word, because the technical meaning of the word Taluvam is their thirst. Their thirst. But the traditional, the medieval commentaries say it refers to the thirst of those who are wandering in the desert. And the thirst is not for water. Lo rav la lechem v'lo tzama la mayim ki im lishmo es dibre Hashem. And what God is doing as to relieve their thirst with atonement. Meaning, here we are, all of us fasting. And we're fasting, it's just hit the beginning of Musaf Amidah, and he's talking about the Kippur, the atonement, as relieving our thirst. It's not the thirst because we haven't eaten or had anything to drink that day. There is another thirst. The real thirst is the thirst for forgiveness. And interesting, the shofar is blown because we have no words. And perhaps kapara is to come back because we can't speak, because our throats are parched. And throats are parched because we are living under such stress that the anxiety has paralyzed our capacity to bring forth the language of prayer. And so he speaks of forgiveness, of atonement, as a response to parching thirst. Even though you have the ambient irony of the fact that we're all fasting. A little bit more. Shakech chamas za'amoch. Now this is interesting, because we have not referred... You see these little pieces of... these little shards of negativity that are there, but that he reduces in size. We referred only tangentially for a moment to the anger, the cruelty of our enemies, and we refer only for a moment to the anger of God. Shakech hamasamach, put aside, right? Let go of your anger. V'sochon siridei amach, and have mercy on those who are left, the remainders of your people. V'aleinu yihi na'amoch, and let your pleasantness be upon us. Nichye mimekor imoch. Now there's a missing word here, because imoch is a reference to the verse in Sefer Tehillim where David HaMelech says, Ki imcho mekor chayim. The source of life is with you. So we don't even refer to the words mekor chayim anymore. We just call it the imach, that which is with you. And the people who are good tehillim zuggers know what's the imach is the source of life. And let us live mimekor, from the source of that which is imach, the source of all life. So this paragraph, I think, is relatively speaking easier to understand. There's a lot in there for that shoemaker to connect with this time. Noor imcha aslicho, oh, Noor. Noor is a tough word to translate. We know that it is some kinoi. It is an expression referring to God.
But enlightened.
It may have to do with light. It may also have to do with Nora, Nora is awe. It may have to do with fire.
If it's transposing, are we allowed to do that? Transposing the letters?
Yeah, go for it. Right, it's not an easy word to. Noor, the trans, it is the Ibn Ezra who suggests Noor as Nora. Yeah, so you're in good company, right? Nochon Maher Lislocho, who is poised to forgive quickly. Why does God have to forgive quickly?
Because
our lives are so short. I couldn't say better. We don't have time. Problem is, most of the solutions to most of the things that ail the world, we won't be around to enjoy. Niv sifaseinu hatzlicha, and make the expression of our lips successful. Na'ak shema'a usalocha. Na'ak is na'kaseinu, our cry. But another time, he can't resist making a new form, a tight form, a little bullet form of a word for prayer, which usually has a kind of a more multisyllabic, mellifluous expression in other places. But he takes na'akosenu and turns it to na'ak. Right? Again, enjoying the hard sounds, the kufs, the gimels, right? And the last, sifaseinu medovavos yeshenim. I'm sorry. Who are the yeshenim? Who are the sleepers? The sleepers are the avos again, those who sleep in maras yeshenei afar. Our lips. Now, midovavos, our lips whisper by virtue of those who are asleep. Yinatzchucha ke'al yoni. Yinatzchucha is a bit of a word bomb because usually say, Yinatzchuni bonai, my children have been victorious over me. But there's also laminatzeach, the conductor. And this is, and shoshanim, this time there's a name of an instrument called Shoshanim. So you see he's going back to the first paragraph using the same words again. 1 minute, Elip. Chadashim gam yeshanim, the old and the new. You remember we started with the old part of the tree and the shoots? The maginas av nishanim, all leaning on magain, on the shield of the Father. Have a wonderful, sweet year, everyone.
Thank you.